Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'm going to tell you what you need to know. I'm going to tell you what you need to know.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now. Finishing strong here on a Monday. David Leske will help us finish strong here in the fourth quarter. Coming up next, we'll talk Royals baseball. With David Leske is Inside the Crown blog. Must read if you're a Royals fan. Time now for a little need to know. Our need to know brought to you by our friends at Gann Asphalt and Concrete. Online at GannAsphalt.com. That's GannAsphalt.com. One contractor, all things parking lots. I'll make a great first impression with a great, smooth, beautiful, perfect parking lot. That's what Gann Asphalt and Concrete does. Online at GannAsphalt.com. Let's start with a Chiefs news, a little Chiefs nugget today in your need to know. Rashee Rice facing a $1 million lawsuit from two victims involved in his March 30th crash in Dallas. The victims are suing for severe injuries, including trauma to the brain, lacerations to the face requiring stitches, multiple contusions about the body, and disfigurement, along with internal bleeding.
No joke.
Serious, the injuries were said to be. Yeah, I guess not life-threatening, but internal bleeding to me is a little scary.
Sounds pretty serious.
So, look, that's what the lawsuit says. I don't know if it happened or didn't happen, but lawsuit says it did. So talking about a $1 million hit there, going to replace a Lamborghini, going to be fines, going to be suspensions. It's a very, very expensive lesson that hopefully Rashee Rice learned about.
That's not easy to do. I'm with you.
Learn from in this situation. So we will see where we go from here. Let's hear from Andy Reid. He was on the Zoom today talking about Rashee Rice, asked what the status is for Rice as they begin the offseason program.
Yeah, so there's no real participation other than by Zoom, so he'll participate in that. But other than that, we don't have anything going on here that he would be involved with. So to answer your question, he's participating in the Zoom.
Okay.
And again, just a reminder on this, it's voluntary. So as we go forward, that's also another part of it.
Right. And do you anticipate that when you move the next phase, it moves back to Kansas City, that it'll be participating in that phase as well?
We're just going to take it day by day here as we go.
Didn't say much there. Maybe there wasn't much to say. But
I don't want to read something into it, but if you're taking it day by day, then the anticipation is no, right?
Yes.
At least you're preparing like no.
Yeah.
If it's day by day, then you don't know you're going to have him.
Yeah.
I'm not trying, again, maybe I'm sure somebody over at Arrowhead doesn't like this, the way I'm phrasing it, but, and you know.
Let
me just ask, look, 3 Super Bowls in 5 years? Like, they know what they're doing there.
Yeah.
So I'm not questioning, like, Andy Reid's some boob. And I'm not saying, well, if you did it this way or, you know, said this, and you'd have won 5-5. I'm not saying that at all. But what's wrong with being like, no, we have to prepare like he's not going to be here. Because he's put himself in a position where the legal process has to play out, and we don't know where this is going to go. And we don't know what it's going to be. So, yes, we have to prepare. Like, you're a dunce if you're just like, no, we're going to act like he's going to be here. And they're not dunces, and they're not doing that. We know that.
Yes.
I don't know why because I love Andy Reid. I think he's great. As a coach, I know the people who work for him, work around him, think he's great. And this is him sticking up for one of his guys. If you're one of our guys, I'm going to stick up for you. But, like, I don't know, maybe if Rashee Rice has to hear some harsh words through the media, maybe it'll help the next guy think about it like, I'm not going to do this stupid thing.
Yeah, the level of linguistic, the parlor game sometimes, it sounds like to me.
Just seems unnecessary.
Just say what you, just put it out there. No one's going to go, what?
Yeah.
I could very well just be
something of a cop-out or something for Andy Reid, but is there an element to if whatever makes him great, if you take the part of his personality that does things like this away, then it might take something really important away that makes him such a great coach? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I don't know what that would be, though. It'd be a...
I think the connection is correct, but it's backwards. Like, it's not that he does that because that helps his coaching. It's who he is, which helps his coaching. He's not capable of it.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
You know, he's not capable of these are his guy. And I think the fact that no matter who you are, no matter how bad you are, no matter what, how you screw it up, you're still one of my guys. You're still in this little bubble with us. And that, you know, there are positives that come with that as well. Hey, you have a tough time. Somebody passes away in your family. And he's there for you. He makes a call. I've heard people talk about how, you know, first guy who called me, Andy Reid.
Well, who'd we have on that is, golly, it was the A1C drink, the bus.
Russ
the bus, yeah. Told the story about his dad, I think, had passed away. And at the same time, things weren't going well. And he had been kicked off the team. And the head coach hadn't heard about that. Andy Reid, who was at Mizzou at that time, put in a word for him, and 10 minutes later, Russ was back on the team.
But he could be all those things and still tell us what more than what he told us today.
Right. I just don't know that he's capable of that. And I don't mean like...
And at 64, he's not going to suddenly become that guy.
Right. And there are some guys, you talk, Sarin, about some guys who the aggression it takes to play football, they can't necessarily turn it off once the game's over. Other guys can.
Well, and maybe Andy Reid
can't... something about him he can't turn off.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, once you're our guy, and we'll go down with you. Mm-hmm. And that mindset makes him a better football coach. I mean, I'm open to that idea.
Yeah.
And I want to be clear. Lots of very nice things, great things I hear from people about Andy Reid having done. So he's, you know, is he without flaws? No. No. But, man, there's a couple of them I can't figure out.
There's some quirks.
Kadarius Toney. He was asked, you know, if he can still trust Rashee Rice.
Well, yeah, listen, as long as he's learned from it, that's it. That's the important part of it. And, you know, we'll take it from there and see, you know, see what takes place. But right now we're just kind of gathering everything and trying to make sure we have all the bases covered.
All right. Again, I mentioned earlier I'm playing the hits today. Like, I have no problem with that statement. The obvious question is, well, how do you know if he's learned from it? Of course he's going to, But let you know, coach, I got it all figured out. Okay, and I get that, and that is an intelligent reaction to have to that comment. But let's say Andy Reid can figure it out. And then now I'm going to play the hit. So let's say he can. It's like, no, we think he's learned from it. You know, he's not going to make this mistake. I'm going to tell you, I had an NFL talent evaluator tell me that they could tell when somebody was truly sorry. I said, what's the biggest attribute you got? He said, I know when someone's BSing me about being sorry. He said, because we all make mistakes, and in this business I deal with a lot of people that have made mistakes that aren't just, you know, and a lot of us have made mistakes that are, like, bad. Not, like, killed someone or, but, like, you know, got suspended from your team because you were, you know, back when marijuana was illegal, you were busted for weed. That's a serious thing. Like, you put marijuana ahead of football. Right? Or you are speeding and going 120 miles an hour down at Georgia after all this has gone on. That's dumb. Right? But can he, and he told me, I can look at a guy and I can know when he's truly sorry. And he said, and that's important because a lot of the guys I deal with have things they need to be sorry for. And if they're sorry, then they won't do it again. Okay, well, let's say Andy Reid can do that. Has he learned from it? He can tell he's truly sorry. He's learned from it. How can you possibly, and again, I'm going to play the hit here. Where do you think I'm going?
Probably number 19.
Yes. How can you tell me Kadarius Toney has learned from anything when he does the same social media, evity FFF and nine hurt and all that? Like, what has he learned?
Yeah.
He has not learned. There is proof. It's all over the social media. So, and again, they can keep it for as long as they want, as long as they're not like, we don't need a wideout, we've got Toney. If they're like, oh, I mean, he's here because we ain't got better. Fine. But you need to be actively seeking better, and then when you get it, he goes.
Yeah.
Okay. Then your system is working.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm still thinking about number four. I mean, as the Chiefs, that comment, when you ask someone, do you still have trust in someone, and their response is, well, let's see how he responds. To me, that says no right now. Not, maybe he didn't have complete trust, or he would have just said yes.
No, the comment was not about Rashee Rice. Comment right. was years ago.
I'm talking about the answer that Andy Reid gave
When
he was asked, do you still have trust in Rashee Rice? He said that, well, let's see. That depends on how he, you know, if he's learned from this. Well, if you have trust in someone and someone says, do you still have trust in that guy, doesn't he just say yes?
Am I
parsing that too much?
Well, I think in some ways he's admitting to us the trust has been damaged.
Yes.
Right? He's saying it without saying it.
Yeah. Well,
and when I get him in here and we bring him in and I coach him and I see what it is and I talk to him, and he said he's already talked to him. But I think the part of it is like, well, let me let the whole process play out.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he's kind of sorry now.
Yeah.
And then when it, you know, he faces a $1 million lawsuit and his wages are garnished, and okay, maybe that'll be the wicked pole. I don't know. We'll see. More from Andy Reid about Hollywood Brown and Irv Smith.
Yeah. So Hollywood Brown is, a good speed receiver. He can play inside or outside. And I stay away from saying a deep threat, although he can do that. He can play within the offense and do all of the different routes that we ask. So he's a nice addition. He's got some experience and production. And then, so Irv is a tight end and kind of does everything pretty good. I mean, he's a good, solid football player. He's a good receiver, good after the catch, good blocker. Not necessarily the biggest guy, but really plays a good physical game, kind of like what he's shown in the past. I think important really for both these guys that they're able to keep themselves, you know, healthy and rolling. And that'll be part of it as we go forward.
Keep them, aware of the mm-hmm. games missed.
Yes.
Right. I thought that was interesting. So it'd be important that they keep themselves healthy. That's important for both guys. So, I did think that one was interesting. Patrick Mahomes available today as well. He's got the new wideout in Hollywood Brown to throw to. He has asked what he's seen so far.
Yeah, I think everybody's seen his speed, the way he's able to track the football down the field, which we'll obviously use. That's something that's huge that we need to continue to get better and better at in this offense. But I think the route running is what I've been pleasantly surprised by. I mean, just the way he's able to get in and out of his cuts. He has a good feel for space, he wants to, like I said, he wants to learn more and more. So I think as he gets within our offense and learns how with the freedom that you have with your route running and your ability to find space, I think we can utilize that ability over the middle of the field. I know he's done that in the past, but I think we can utilize it at an even higher load. So I think it'll be something that we can really emphasize in our offense.
That's what I thought when they first signed him, is so much of the pub was about the deep ball. But everything you saw on tape said he could be a huge key in the intermediate routes. And when you get a little closer and the field gets a little shorter, can he find open spaces? I think he could be fantastic on crossing routes and rub routes and getting some separation, maybe some slants if they throw slants.
But I think also that to me says one of the things they've seen is, well, in Arizona or Baltimore, hey, when it's a go route, you know, and you're in the slot or you're the Y or the Z, wherever it is. Well, go route is a go route, and you're going down the numbers, and you got to stay down the numbers because that's where I'm going to throw the ball. Where the Chiefs are, yeah, it's a go route, and you start down the numbers, but when you see that the safety's coming that way, you have the freedom to go outside. And in mm-hmm. fact, you better go outside because Pat's going to throw it to your outside shoulder.
And I'll give it to you.
You have the freedom to curl it in,
yep.
Right? Like, and so once you learn where that is, we give you freedoms because Andy can design it, and it's flexible, and Pat can see it and will throw you open, right? Andy will scheme you open. If the safety is helping, you got to go outside. If he's not helping, you can cut that up the middle, right? Or if he's coming up, then the gap, you're going to the gap, wherever the gap is. And I think that requires intelligence from the receivers, requires a lot of processing from Patrick Mahomes. But I think they're probably saying, it's not this rigid route. You got to go 10 and in. And right there, the ball's going to be there or I'm not going to throw it to you. Right? Like, it's like, no, you go 10 and in, but if he sits on you, what do we hear about the big Rashee Rice, the play of the playoffs? Or was it late in the year? Whenever it was, where it's like he took it on the go because he read it, the safety wasn't there, and he went to the open space. And I think that's the hope is that Hollywood Brown, has had the speed but hasn't been able to use it because of the design of the offense. Andy Reid, I asked him about the draft coming up, if wide receiver Rashee Rice's situation, and of course Wanya Morris right now started at slated at left tackle, if those would be considered need spots going into the draft.
You're all over this thing. I can tell you're deep into it. I like it. So those are two positions, yeah, we are looking at, but I mean, we're looking, Brett's looking at all of them. So you're sitting at pick 32. So it's a tough, it's tough to tell you what's going to take place there. It's a great thing on one hand to be 32nd because you've done okay. And then, on the season before, but that's a long wait and you better really stay true to, true to the board, what's there, and take the best player you possibly can, you know, at that spot. So I would tell you those two positions he's looking at, but he's also kind of going through everything. So we've got spots and depth that we could use really everywhere. And then, you know, we'll just see with the whole Rashee thing, how that goes. But, you know, we should have, when it's all said and done, we should have players in there ready to go.
We've heard stories of Patrick Mahomes and, you know, getting his input. Brett Veach talking to him about where to go. I asked him if he's got his draft board ready.
I look at some of the stuff. I mean, I think what it's cool that Veach and Coach Reed kind of let me in on all the conversations that they have about players. And I like that stuff. I like watching film and watching other guys from college and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, man, I mean, we have the greatest of the great as far as GM and head coach and the staffs that they've built. And so I know they're going to get great players in here. I'll give my input, but I trust that they're going to do the work to get the great players in. And you've seen our team. It seems like we get younger and younger every single year. That comes from drafting.
Okay.
Yep.
They'll listen to him. One more for Nick Bolton going into the final year of his deal. I told him, it's a phrase out there, the contract year's undefeated. What have you done differently going into your contract year?
No, not really. I'm kind of just trying to focus in on myself a little bit. I'm trying to make myself a better athlete, better football player. I've been blessed to have won Super Bowl, and I missed some games with my hand and my ankle. Having a little bit more healthy this offseason than I was the last couple of years. So I'm taking that to my advantage. I'm trying to put my best foot forward, and just a little prehab. I'm trying to stay ahead of stuff. So I think that's probably the biggest thing. I've had the opportunity to have more rest, have more time to work on those things. And, it's been a blessing. But that's kind of what I've been focused on the last couple of weeks for sure.
He talked about being able to lift fully, that he'd been doing everything one-handed. So he's mm-hmm. trying to balance things out because just lifting with the one side because of the wrist surgery. So, trying to get healthy, the number one thing, I think, for Nick Bolton.
And I love the word prehab. That's a term that's kind of gotten into the NFL lexicon. Not an actual word, but we know what it means.
The Eagles have extended Devontae Smith. They agree on a 3-year extension through 2028. It's worth $75 million with $51 million guarantees. Devonta Smith say $25 million a year to you?
Not to me, doesn't.
Have at it, Philly. The Colts and their star defensive tackle, DeForest Buckner, agreed to an extension, 2-year deal for $46 million, runs through the 26th season. And T. Higgins asked whether or not he would play for the Bengals this season, said, I do anticipate it. I've grown a love for Cincinnati that I didn't think I would. In other words, they're showing me a whole bunch of money, and I'm getting close to signing an extension. We'll take a break. We talk to David Lesky about the Royals next here on the program.
He's taken Larry King to a Prince concert. He's eaten Dairy Queen while watching a Duke game.
Certainly Duke is Duke.
He's seen the Princess Bride with his friend Earl.
Inconceivable.
Yeah, it's safe to say he's obsessed with the Royals. From inside the crowd, it's David Lesky on the program.
David Lesky is brought to you by Gann Asphalt and Concrete, Kansas City's nationally recognized full-service paving and pavement maintenance contractor, making parking lot problems disappear in Kansas City since 1994. Free consultations, no commissions, in-house crews, and every project comes with a written warranty. Find them online at GannAsphalt.com or call 816-484-3338.
Let's talk some Royals baseball. David Lesky from Inside the Crown. Great blog. Does a fantastic job covering your Kansas City Royals. He's brought to you by Gann Asphalt and Concrete. One contractor, all things parking lot, Gann Asphalt and Concrete. Find him online at GannAsphalt.com. David, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I think this is a pretty simple answer. I think you'll have the same answer Curtis and I had, but there did seem to be some grumblings. They only get 1 of 3 from the Mets. A sign of a return to normalcy and the Royals being bad, or just no? Guess what? Baseball happens, and it's still a good team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% sure if they're a good team or not, but I think that's really just baseball happens. I mean, Friday they had their first game that they didn't play well. I mean, they lost that game. I have a thing up on Inside the Crown now that's the 54-54-54 breakdown. It was the first game all year that they were just always going to lose, and they haven't, because that happens, whatever you believe, whether it's 60, 54, whatever, it happens. It happens to every team. That was one of those games. And then yesterday, you know, they Jose, I don't know how he says it. I think it's Buteau, or I'm not sure, but he looked legitimately excellent. that changeup was ridiculous, and then they kind of figured out the changeup, and then he went to a slider, and that was ridiculous. And then by the time they maybe started to get on that, they pulled him, and that was that. It was a pitcher's duel, and it was decided by an umpire at the end. So it wasn't – I just feel like, yeah, it's just baseball. It happens.
Baseball has a rule about not running into the catcher. How come it didn't apply yesterday to Salvador Perez getting slid into on the inside part of the base path in the fourth inning?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I think there's an actual answer to that. I don't know what it is, so I don't believe there was any rule broken. But I meant to look that up earlier today, and the second you started asking that, I was like, oh, that tab is up somewhere, and I don't remember what it is. But it's an interesting rule when there are so many little nooks and crannies that can make this or that okay. But I think it was legal. Looked bad. Certainly looked bad. Also, just a bad slide. Why are you sliding into the guy with the ball when you've got the whole outside of the plate area?
And you have that part of the plate because that's what the catcher is supposed to leave you. And Salvador Perez did. And yet he still is now going to miss tonight's game. That's what pisses me off.
No, I'm 100% with you. And I'd have to look this up. And I'm like 90% sure it was fully legal, but I don't know why it was fully legal, because the whole point, like you said, the whole point of the rule was to protect catchers. And Salvador Perez did everything right. But Starling Marte still slid into him for some reason. I don't know if maybe he thought he could lodge. I don't know. I really don't know. And, yeah, hopefully it's just tonight. I mean, Salvi obviously says he's back tomorrow, but I think if Salvador Perez had his choice, he would have played in Boston today, and then flown to Chicago to play with the Royals tonight. So we'll see how it goes tomorrow. But it does look like they avoided a serious injury so far. But yeah, I don't really understand it.
Yeah, and listen, the Royals don't seem to have a problem with it, or they would have made a thing of it yesterday. So I get it, and nobody else seems to have a problem with it. To me, it feels like one of those things. We're going to see a Yankee-Red Sox game, and some backup catcher for the Red Sox, Connor Wong, is going to get hurt, and then it's going to be this big Sports Center deal, and I'm going to have to watch all the talking heads crap talk about it the next day when a many-time All-Star, Gold Glove winner, World Series MVP got taken out, and nothing is said. And that, like,
yeah, in New York too, so it's not like it was on the big stage.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I thought that's what the rule was about. Was they all lost their minds when Buster Posey got hit, but Salvador Perez gets hit, nobody cares. Like for me, a little bit. Like I think Lou Piniella would have come out there screaming and yelling, just to make the statement like we're not backing down. And you mess with one of our guys, like, I'm coming at you. And to earn some credit with the umpires. I mean, listen, I don't think you got to be a red ass and scream and yell as a manager. I've talked to enough players. If you make a player better, if Matt Cotrero has the analytics, the numbers, and hires the coaches that make guys better, and if MJ Melendez goes from wondering whether or not he's got a big league career, and Matt Cotrero and his staff are turning him into what looks like right now a legitimate RBI bat, and are teaching him to be good in the outfield where he's getting outfield assists and not making a fool of himself, then he's going to run through fire for Matt Cotrero. Like, you can't scream and yell your way to being a leader. You have to lead them to personal success. And if Matt Cotrero is doing that, he's going to be a fine manager. So I'm not trying to say this is some blind spot in his managing abilities. But I do think there's a little bit of something of getting the umpires that we're not here to just, you know, have sand kicked in our face. I wouldn't have minded somebody being out there like, hey, here's the base path. You know, what's going on? Like that just a note, I guess I'll say. I put it out there.
No, that's interesting. And what's funny is, you know, the umpires were obviously a big story yesterday. And I there were a handful of comments. It goes back to last season. A lot of people are really upset that Mac Quattrero doesn't lose his you-know-what on a nightly basis. And more so last year, I think, because you know, you're losing. I mean, they finished 56-106, but a lot of people, it's easy to forget that it was even worse than that for a long time. And they were 44-101 with 17 games to go. So, I mean, that was obviously a horrendous team. And a lot of people felt like Quattrero should have been more, like you said, red-assed. And, you know, I always, my response is always, I don't know what that's going to accomplish. But I hadn't really thought about it from this perspective that you just mentioned. It's a good point. I mean, it feels like you are protecting your player in that instance rather than just being out there to be out there. And I mean, I don't necessarily have a problem that he didn't, but now that you say it, it wouldn't have been the worst thing, I feel like.
Yeah, you described exactly my feelings. I don't have a problem that he's not out there either, but I do think it was an opportunity. Listen, I say it all the time. Managers, GMs, coaches, they're not here to tell us the God's honest truth. They're here to tell us what they need to say, what's best for their team. And Mac Quattrero is not out there to manage the most sportsmanlike approach he can for the umpires in Major League Baseball. He's out there to win baseball games. And if that means you got to try to get over on an up, then get over on an up. Because I guarantee you, and I don't want to hear about like, well, that's not part of the game. Then, okay, so you guys never had any sticky stuff on your hands with your pitching staffs when everybody else did? Like, don't act like, oh, no, we're pure as the driven snow on this, but on other things we'll tiptoe around. Like, I don't think you want to be intimidated. And I think there will come a time, and I'm with you, there was no reason to get upset last year. They were going nowhere. You'd just be a fool. Right. I have more respect for Mac Quattrero that he didn't come unglued a bunch of times last year trying to make a show. That team was going nowhere. But they're in it now. The games matter now, right? And maybe they won't in 3 weeks because they'll hit a skid and they're not good enough. But right now they matter. And so if you got to, like, and I think he jumped. He got on the umps in about, like, the third or fourth inning. There was something where he kind of hustled down to the opening of the in front of by the fence in the dugout and seemed to be barking out at somebody. And I appreciate
you're right.
That.
I forgot about that. That's a good point. I don't know what that was either. Now that you say that, I can't remember.
No, and I don't think anybody knew what it was, but he obviously had something he was upset about. And so, listen, I don't think it's out of his game. I just think we haven't seen it yet, right? He'll grab
that. Well,
that's
the thing too. If you're at If you're at the stadium at home, I don't remember a lot of times that he's come out during the inning. But Mac Quattrero has a lot of between inning conversations with umpires. I don't know if you've noticed that, but keep an eye out. He hasn't so much this year, but keep an eye out for that because I've seen him get out there and get a little hot. But there's no broadcast, so nobody sees it, and it's not. I mean, he's not in an umpire's face or anything, but you can tell. I mean, there's body language. You can see, okay, he's not having a conversation about, hey, you should try the steakhouse after the game. It's something that he's upset about. He does it a lot, I guess, behind the scenes. But, yeah, I'm trying to remember now what it could have been in that inning, and I'm blanking.
Yeah. Listen, I'm more and more – you know what else I saw? Vinny Pascantino. Did you see when he caught the ball in foul territory in the – seventh or eighth, and mm-hmm. He's on a run in, it's up in the sun, and he didn't get all the way there and settle under it and catch it over his head. He had to flip the glove out there and catch it about waist height. And then he left it out there and looked into the dugout of the Mets, to which, to me, was obvious somebody was on him, whether it was like, watch out, watch out, watch out. You know, I don't know. I don't know what the hell they were yelling. But he gave him a bit of a look, and I forget who was pitching then, but he ran by. They kind of tapped gloves, and he went on by the pitcher, and the pitcher kept looking back there and barking into the dugout. I like that, too.
That was Schreiber.
Yeah, it was Schreiber. Okay. They showed that they were not taking your crap. We're here, and that's a sign of a confident team. No one on the Royals team in the midst of on their way to 40-101 and 56-106 – nobody's barking back at anybody because you know you're just a loser. right?
Right.
This,
well, and,
they
and
don't
Reagan
feel like losers.
Reagan's was fired up, too, in the – I can't remember if it was the end of the fifth or the sixth, but whichever inning it was, he was screaming on the mound, too. So, I mean, you're right. This is a team. They've got some attitude. They've got some fire, which is a nice change.
Yeah, which is a sign that they believe in what they're doing. They believe in the club. That listen, we're not a bunch of humps, right? Like, we'll bark back at you, which I think is a very good sign. We're talking with David Leske inside the crown. David, how about MJ Melendez with the outfield assist? Not just that he got an outfield assist, but it was a professional baseball throw. Got up to the ball, got it in, got his feet under him, threw a strike. That's the play, obviously, that Salvador Perez got hurt on. Where are we at on MJ Melendez, the defender?
Yeah, that throw was just everything about that play was perfect. The way he approached the ball, he very clearly, and I mean, it wasn't a hard line drive, but it was hit on a line. The way he had to go about that to get to that ball to make that throw, everything was intentional. Everything was intentional to that point to make that throw home. And I don't remember another play in his career that wasn't just routine, that everything was intentional and went the way that it should have gone to make something really cool happen. And so that was great to see. I think he's getting there. And, you know, you look at the numbers, he is, I believe, plus two in defensive runs saved in the outfield this year. I think it's one in left and one in right, which the sample is this. Defensive numbers take, like, literally years to normalize. So to look at it after 16 games, and it hasn't even played off 16, but to look at it that quickly, I don't know what it means. But he's very clearly getting better and better out there. And the thing about Melendez, we've talked about this. He has the tools. He's not a burner, but he's got speed. He can get to the ball. He has a really good arm. He has a pretty accurate arm, generally. But it seems like it's finally all being put together for him. And, yeah, I mean, even if he's going to hit, what is he hitting? Something like 280, 375, 75 or something like that. Whatever it is, he's got a 150 plus weighted runs created plus. I can't remember what the exact number is, but if he's going to do that, he just needs to be an average outfielder. And so far, he's been an average outfielder, and at times better, and showing that maybe there is a little bit more in that tank as he learns the position better. But yeah, he's to me probably been the best development of this season. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. has been great. Vinny Pascantino getting hot is really helpful. But and Nelson Velasquez has hit, although I have some questions about that. But MJ Melendez being a complete player is, if the Royals are going to be good, they need that. He has to be a legitimate middle of the order bat who doesn't kill you in the outfield.
945 OPS, currently second on the team to Bobby Witt, 168 OPS plus. So the bat has certainly been there.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's a great development, and I give great credit to him. You know, for going out and making it happen, you know, and making himself better. And like you said, he doesn't have to be, if he's going to be a big run producer, he just has to be good. And that's what left field is for. Like, it was great that Alex Gordon was great all those years, but it was, I'm not going to say that defense is ever overkill, but like, if you could have found a 38 home run hitting outfielder that was just okay, you'd have been a better ball club. Right? Like, you know, short of that, great to have 20 home runs and a super defender, but ideally you want somebody who can hit the ball, and he looks like he can be that guy. Vinny Pascantino, you know, slow start. We've seen that before. You're convinced he's all good?
Yeah, I think so. I think you look at what Vinny Pascantino has done in his career, and I know it's a short major league sample, but he did it in the minors too. And there are two things that make me not worried, and now are really not worried. He's still walking more than he's striking out. He's got an 11, I think, 0.7% walk rate and 9 or 10% strikeout rate. So that's obviously great. But he's not barreling the ball yet, but he is hitting the ball pretty hard. His maximum exit velocity, which is a number that is more important than average exit velocity, is up there. I feel like he was getting his timing back, honestly. I really do. And that's not surprising. I mean, the guy hadn't played a spring training, whatever you believe how competitive spring training is. There, there's a different game speed once you get to the regular season. And spring training prepares you for that, but it doesn't prepare you for that with like situations. And so I think he was missing out on some timing a little bit. Seems like it's generally come back. I think that there might be some dips here and there. But what he does, like I said, he's not going to strike out. He's going to put together a good plate appearance. So he's generally going to give himself a good pitch to hit because of his, he hates calling it plate discipline, but because of his plate discipline. And, I mean, this season he has a 4.5% swinging strike rate. So he's not swinging and missing. It's the whole profile screams he's going to be fine. And it's honestly, it's crazy that in four games he's gone from, I think he had like a 4 weighted runs created plus, and he's up to 99 or 100 right now. So took 4 games to get there, which speaks to both how good he's been in these last 4 games he's played and how small the sample it was before. But, yeah, I was never worried about Vinny Pasquantino. I was getting worried that it might take a little too long to get there, but I was never worried about him on the whole.
Talking to David Leske here in the program, Adam's all over me here, so let's get to our final four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System.
Are you going to let him bully you?
He does it all the time. I'm a battered host, is what I am.
I get it. Yes. I get it.
The University of Kansas Health System, the official health care provider of the Royals. Get care from the experts the Royals trust to make the right call. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/royals. I'll start you with this. A little pulse check on a couple of things here. First of all, will you watch the WNBA draft tonight at all?
No, probably not. Okay.
All right, just checking.
Sorry, WNBA.
I will check in on it. I want to see Caitlin Clark get announced, and then I'm kind of intrigued by where the LSU girl goes, and it'll get some of my time for sure.
You know what? I might. Watch for the first pick.
There you go.
Spirit.
Holy cow!
We got an Iowa house here.
What a follower you were in high school. Oh, they're all wearing capas, huh? I better go get a pair. No, that's good. I think people should check it out. All right. Next up, what's your favorite nut? Do you have a nut?
Boy.
Todd always has nuts in his office. I have a favorite nut. Do you have a favorite nut?
Yeah. That's a good question. I'm a nut fan. Quick story. I developed an allergy to cashews and pistachios.
Well, don't have that.
30s. In my 30s.
Yeah.
I love them, and I can't have them. So it's gone to a good lightly salted almond is where I go.
Yeah, light salt. Boo! Boo! Well, no. I like the
triple salt.
I forget the company that makes all the different flavors. Exactly.
Blue Diamond, yeah.
They make a Korean barbecue one. It's got to have quadruple salt. It's the best.
Those are great. The wasabi ones.
Yeah, the wasabi ones are great too. Absolutely. Yeah. Did you watch the Masters, any of it, yes or no?
Any of it? Yeah, a little bit, but not, I wouldn't say I watched it.
Okay.
It was on in a restaurant I was in, and then I flipped it on yesterday just for like half an hour.
And finally, who leads the Royals in home runs this year?
I'm going to stick with Bobby Witt.
Okay.
Just because, I mean, he's Bobby Witt. He's better than everybody.
Okay. 4 for Bobby Witt, 4 for Salvador Perez, 3 for Michael Garcia, 3 for MJ Melendez, 2 for Vinny, 2 for Nelson Velasquez. I think we've actually got a bit of a competition, so it should be fun to watch this year, whoever ends up doing it. David?
I'll give you this. I think there'll be 620 home run guys.
You're on the record. There he is. Bold and daring predictions from David Leske. You're in the program.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, the good sense, end of the hour answer. Before Domantas Sabonis, who was the last player to lead the league in rebound while averaging at least 8 assists per game?
Wow, Jokic?
Wilt Chamberlain in 1968. In fact, those are the only 2 seasons where someone's averaged 13 rebounds and 8 assists.
Wow, that's impressive. Playing for some good sense, goodsensesubs.com. Get it on your way home tonight. Put your order in. They'll make it whatever time you want. Make sure you're part of that loyalty club. People, free food. You know, you're just letting it pass you by if you're not part of the loyalty club. You can do it on the app or online at goodsensesubs.com. Leave you with this here today. Vern Lundquist called his final Masters.
40th and final.
40th and final Masters, 83 years old. Network assignments for ABC, CBS, did NFL, did the Cowboys.
The Cowboys, yeah.
You were mentioning he was the Cowboys play-by-play
Bless his
guy.
Heart, he's got to be the sickest man in America. That was Vern.
Yep, that was his call. Army-Navy game. He did all kinds of things in sports, not to mention being a fixture in Happy Gilmore.
Yes.
Something really cool yesterday during the Masters. He was seated, you know, with his headset and everything to talk off the course.
On the 16th hole.
Tiger Woods standing there waiting in the midst of what was a bad round, you know, finishing up, a tough day. Not as bad as Saturday was for him, but... And he's there, and he's in front of Vern, and Vern's talking about it. And then Tiger walks over, walks off the courts, and shakes the hand of Vern Lundquist. Tough day. Be easy for Tiger to sit there and pout and be pissy and all that. But one of the greats, one of the iconic broadcasters, and a guy who's been calling 40 Masters was hanging it up. And the greatest, or maybe at worst, second greatest golfer of all time, said, I got to go shake that guy's hand. That's pretty cool.